If we can begin, we'll, I know we're missing a couple that hopefully will get back in here. And Dr. Moldy, good to see you. Thank you for being here. Again, we will ask you for an opening statement, but and just to go through the record here, after we go through all of that, your statement, then we will have questions from the council. And when we've got about 5 minutes left in the 45-minute time period, we will wrap it up, and you can have a closing statement at that point. So have any questions before we even start?
No, I don't think so.
Very good. Well, the floor is yours now.
I guess we have a little time.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to meet with you. It is an honor to be considered for the position of regent of the University of Minnesota. You might ask, why do I want to be a regent? Some of my first childhood memories, sitting next to the radio listening to WCCO, describing the touchdown runs of Paul Gill and Bob McNamara, I said, I want to be part of the University of Minnesota. And this I was able to do as I was a student at the University of Minnesota for 10 years. University of Minnesota is in my fabric. Now that I'm retired, I am looking forward to actively being involved with the University of Minnesota again. I look at this as a chance to give back to the university that I cherish. I have, as I said, retired, and I have the time to devote to this very demanding position. I have no conflicting interests which are going to be a problem with this position. Mentioning attributes that I have that I would like to bring before you. Number one, I have a very diverse background. I was born and raised on a farm. I purchased the farm from my parents, and now I've owned and managed this farm for 40 years. I did my undergraduate and my medical school at the University of Minnesota, and during my three undergraduate years, I lived in a dormitory on campus, and I worked my way through school with the assistance of limited scholarships and loans. I then did my radiology residency at the University of Minnesota. Thereafter, I did a 2-year stint in the Air Force in Minot, North Dakota. I was chief radiology at the regional hospital there. I returned to the Twin Cities and worked for 36 years with Suburban Radiologic Consultants. The last 17 years, I was on the staff of the University of Minnesota Medical School. Number two, I have board and leadership experience that during which time I oversaw large budgets. I was chief of staff of Berry Riverside Medical Center. There were 1,000 doctors on the staff during this time period. This is now the West Campus of the University of Minnesota. I was also chief of radiology of 3 different hospitals. And during the several years I was on those positions, I was on the medical executive committee for those hospitals. I had board involvement with several boards. 2 of these were the Fairview Riverside Medical Center Board. This hospital was the second in market share in the West Metro at that time. I was also on the board of Suburban Radiologic Consultants for 15 years, and Suburban is one of the largest radiology groups in the country. Number three, I consider diversity a way of life. It's not an abstract concept, and I will be unwavering in my support of diversity issues as they may present themselves as I become, or if I become, a leader. And number four, I consider myself a true Minnesotan. I was born and raised here, had my education here, had my career, and plan on having my retirement here. I know how Minnesotans think. I have an inner compass of what Minnesota values are. In summary, let me say simply and directly, I would be honored to be a regent of the University of Minnesota. My background in agriculture and medicine fit well with the strengths of the University of Minnesota. The board experience has qualified me for the role that I might have on the regents, overseeing large budgets and the governance of the university. And I, in diversity, consider it a way of life. I'm a true Minnesotan, and I consider I know the people of Minnesota well. Finally, this job is very demanding. It takes up an extraordinary amount of time. I have that time. I'm retired, and I have no limiting factors on the time that I can put into it. And I have no conflicting in it. So I thank you for listening to my introduction. And at this time, I would be happy to take questions.
Good. Thank you very much. Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Moldy, first thing I have to say, as a family physician to a radiologist, I'm impressed that you have an interest in the infectious disease with your avoiding a virus.
Thank you.
But that's not my question. You know, being involved in the medical field, the about 40% of the budget of this university is related to the health sciences. And in the last two or three or four years, there's been, on occasion, some not-so-good publicity. And in some people's viewpoint, that, as we heard it described, the renowned university is no longer renowned as a medical school. Give me your opinion about that. And if so, what do they need to do to return to the days of the past?
That's a good question. Thank you, Councilman Rogers and Chairman Berry. I think some steps are starting to fall into position. The hire that they made of Brooks Jackson for the dean position. He appears to be a very strong individual, very strong in past research efforts, and seems to have great ideas that he has espoused most recently in Minnesota position this last month. And he has gone down the lines of increased value, managing costs, increasing the amount of research and publication in peer reviewed journals, and right down the line through matching our health care providers with the diverse populations that we have in Minnesota. these are all steps that it's good to see that they're out there. It'll have to be a situation where the governance in place and administration in place across the university sees that we're making progress in these areas. And I think the thing that needs to be done is metrics need to be put together, and we follow metrics of that we can have as initial benchmarks and see improvement across areas where there are perceived weaknesses. The other thing that has been done recently is the organization of the UMP, University of Minnesota Physicians, and Fairview, with a overseeing University of Minnesota Health. And, you know, we don't get lost in the word Fairview, you know, when we're talking about the institution. It's the University of Minnesota Health. That was a very well done idea. These are all things that are going to put us on the right path. Their strategy or their strategic planning is talking about if there are researchers and if there are great teachers out there, they are going to be in a position to compete and not skimp on putting in the monies to get these people in key positions. So there are a number of things that are looking better, but it's, again, we have to keep evaluating and keep looking at the metrics to see if the improvements are coming in the areas that we're looking to see if that he is espousing as key points.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Joey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kent, looking to the upcoming term, 2015, 2018, 2021, in real tangible terms, what do you believe standing up unwaveringly for diversity looks like in those upcoming years?
The population of Minnesota has changed dramatically in perhaps the 90s, going into the first decade of the century. Now here we have the Hmong population. We're starting to see those folks, some great success stories and getting integrated into the population. We followed that with one of the largest, of course, is the Somali population. They're earlier in the assimilation process into our society, and they're in many times grappling with language issues at this time, and then the economics are limited, and so we have to make sure that we have safety nets in place for these people, and one of the key things is to put the resources where they're needed. And for example, as I was mentioning with medicine, we have to, a goal would be to bring forth, and it might be difficult to bring equality to, for example, medical schools, and having the percentage of Somalis in medical school that are percentage of Somalis in the population. It certainly is something to aspire to. You're saying as we go forward, there are the Hispanics in Minnesota are another huge population across the state in the agricultural areas, and they have picked up entry-level jobs and across the state. And again, many of them are grappling with language. On my farm, for example, it's been gratifying to see that I sold off the house because I didn't want that to go downhill from just being offset. There's a Hispanic couple. They speak no English. Their kids are going to Lacaparl Valley, and they're speaking perfect English. And they're integrating into society. And so it's, I've become good friends with these folks at that site, and I fight my way through language with my limited Spanish skills with the parents. But these are evolutionary things, and we have to do everything we can at the university to bring along the education and the professional people to manage the population.
Thank you. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions for you, Doctor. The Suburban Radiologic Consultants, is that the group that it also is affiliated with the Methodist Radiology Department?
It's the group that is at all of the peripheral Fairview hospitals, so it's Fairview Southdale. We've got a presence at the West Campus of the University of Minnesota, which was Fairview Riverside, Fairview Ridges, Fairview Lakes, Fairview Princeton.
So it's not the one in Methodist. I just ask because there's been a lot of legislative controversy around the moratorium on new radiology facilities, mm-hmm. and so I wondered if you were part of that conversation.
Yeah, no, that as Health Partners has a presence there, and that is mainly the refunds site there.
And then my other question is, because of your relationship with Fairview and the existing relationship between the university and Fairview, you've probably seen the good, the bad. What are your impressions around the Fairview culture and its impact on the medical health facilities at the university?
That's a very good question. And there's perhaps at this point 30% of the feeder mechanism into the university is through the Fairview system. Mm-hmm. That could be much increased. There has got to be increased cooperation. There's got to be decrease in competition between the community hospitals and the university. The staffs in particular have got to be feeling that the university is a partner. And some things would be very important to do in this regard. I remember Michael Osterholm, of course, would come out and give talks at Fairview Southdale Hospital. Things like that are just great. I mean, people get to see these great minds, get information, whatever. We have had situations where we have good rapport. For example, our breast center. We work together purchasing special PACS equipment, in other words, special machinery that we would look at mammography on the digital end of things. So we did that as a committee with the two entities. So we had all the stakeholders at the table, the chief of technologies and the radiologists and the budgetary people and so forth. We also had rotation of fellows through breast imaging fellows through our place, which we took on as brought us opportunity, and they really enjoyed their time there. These sorts of things have got to increase, and we've got to cut down the competitiveness.
Do you think, I'm sorry, follow on, do you think, given that you've worn the other hat, that you would be at all pulled in terms of loyalty?
No. I am of the mind that we got to do whatever we can to make these institutions work together with each other.
Thanks.
Thank you, Doctor. Just to remind you that these are being recorded, so if some of our members have to leave or so on, they can always go back and listen to it. So,
yep.
Thank you. Margaret.
I think Senator Pratt put up his hand at the same time I did. I'll defer to you, and then I'll go follow you.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms., for coming today. The university's got a broad mission, and as I look at your board work, it's pretty focused on the medical field. Can you talk about community involvement, the leadership roles you've had in the community, as well as how you might look at that role of governance and how that might tie in with your previous experience?
Rob, thank you for the question. The community involvement that I've had, was on the board of the Eden Prairie Youth Basketball over several years. I was the medical director of the United States Open Golf Tournament at Hazeltine when we had the unfortunate lightning strike, and we dealt with several casualties and inadvertently or serendipitously, I guess, it developed the changes in how lightning is handled across the milieu of sporting events and spectator sports worldwide. This was more serendipitous in depth from that standpoint. Those are, two of the things that I can think of in that regard.
And then the second part of my question, how do you view those experiences as your role in governance on U of M? What have you been able to take from those experiences?
Specifically the community ones or?
Overall.
Of course, the overseeing budgets, the budget at Fairview Riverside Medical Center was perhaps a quarter of a billion in that range. This gives an opportunity in that range where I have had the fiduciary input in those roles. Expanding on this, though, we are moving into a different era. AGB just did a commission report on what colleges and universities are going to have to do to be vital in the future. And I think what I did in the past and what everybody did in the past is perhaps
compare it, what was done at the administrative level. We'd look at finances. They'd look at finances. We'd look at audits. They'd look at audits. What's happened is that the costs of tuition have just gone up and up and up. There's been disinvestment, of course, by legislatures across the country in public education. And this has had to be made up by tuition increases. Costs have gone up dramatically. Health care, benefits, retirements, everything in the way of fixed costs is going up. And we're pricing ourselves to the point that public trust in the universities has been taking a hit, that there is not. Basically what has to be looked at is a more strategic future for boards. They have to change the board structure to perhaps a where several committees are combined and, more importantly, strategic committee to look at 5 and 10 year plans is continually on board. They have done a strategic plan at the university. I think that's a great idea. They have to look at cross-cutting or cost-cutting and come up with metrics to measure or common metrics across universities to compare and benchmark one against the other and to drill down on these. There are other tools that may be having to be brought into play, such as one of, I suppose it can be considered Draconian, but it's called forensic financial audits, where you're going into a department and outside experts are going down and really getting to the bottom of what budgetary items are inside departments, looking for waste. The university, for example, is talking about in their new strategic plan that they're inviting people to suggest stop programs on the ineffectual or reduplicated items that people have to go through in the hoops as far as administrative red tape. These are all great ideas. So getting costs down, getting value up, matching it to what the needs of the state of Minnesota are. These are all things that we have to look for in the future. And that drifted from your question. I'm sorry. But
Thank you. I've got six people queued up, so that's probably going to be it. Margaret.
All right. We'll see if you can give us a concise answer to this. We ask the references, what's the person's greatest strengths? Flip side of the coin, what's their greatest weakness as a regent? And we do that because it shows leadership style. It also tells us something about the big issues they've dealt with. Unequivocally, all your references said you're one of the smartest people they've ever met. Flip side of it, one of them said he continues to explore beyond the end point. Another said stubborn and tenacious. As you think about those characteristics and you think about all the tough issues that you had to grapple with, what's one of them that you'd like to do a do-over?
That's a good question, and would have to say that the one that I probably would look to is
piece of machinery that we were going to get for the Fairview Southdale Breast Center. We looked at it every which way. The molecular breast imaging is a nuclear medicine tool that is a really amazing tool that in dense breasts is finding tumors that are hidden. We ended up getting this. It was going through its review stage on the reimbursement. It was getting reimbursed, but it had to be a couple, three extra phone calls and whatever. Well, we got the machine in place, and then all of a sudden Blue Cross Blue Shield pulled the plug on it. And they just made an arbitrary decision. You know, I mean, it was a backroom thing that was not available to us, and it wasn't being reimbursed. So the machine was, you know, the people couldn't afford it. We had to go with other alternatives, more expensive alternatives, MRIs, triple billing and whatever. But end all was that that machine gathered dust for a couple of years, and we got limited numbers of patients that got to use it. So one that I can think of.
Lois.
Doctor, thank you very much. Very concisely, how can the economic engine driver of the University of Minnesota have impact on the economies of Appleton, Dawson, and Madison, Minnesota? Or can it?
Say,
how can it? Or
this
can
is
it?
This is the Little Sioux Conference we're talking about here, right out in that area.
Yeah.
Or at least it was in that area. You know, there's been a lot of consolidation since then. Good question. And there are exciting initiatives that are coming together at the university right now. The MinDrive initiative is well funded by the legislature, and one of the programs is, well, there's a limited amount of phosphorus in the world. And mining, it's going to be depleted in 50 years. And the researcher at the U is finding a way to unlock phosphorus from waste. And then this would be available, giving us a sustainable, one of the sustainable tools, nutrients for agriculture.
From human waste and animal fecal waste.
You know, human, animal, yeah. Turkeys. There's a few turkey operations.
Excellent. Thank you.
So, you want a concise, stop
yep,
it there.
That works.
Good. Pat.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask your understanding or your impression of the components of higher education in Minnesota, namely the Minsky system, both 2 and 4 year colleges, private colleges and universities, and the University of Minnesota. And if you would comment on what you view as their specific roles, how they fit together.
Thank you. A difficult question to a certain extent. First of all, as far as Minsky colleges, there might be more of a vocational and a teaching and heading down these sorts of paths. The university has got a broad spectrum, and of course it's got the research aspects with it. Majority of the research is, of course, going to be done at the university. And then
the larger programs and the professional graduate programs and so forth. Private institutions get a great liberal arts education. And liberal arts education is something that's important. I don't know if you'd allow me to digress. I got a BA degree from the university. My thoughts on that. If you want me to expound, I can.
Well, tell you what, I'll let others ask questions. So
okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, Paul.
A very important focus of the University of Minnesota system is improving and enhancing the student experience. So I want to find out from your perspective as a 36-year radiologist, how does your profession and you in particular work to enhance the student experience for those that are following in your footsteps?
I have to see if I understand your question. You're saying how do my school years put me in position for it, or how does my career put?
I'm thinking of your career. If I look at your resume, 36 years as a radiologist.
Uh-huh.
So once you were finished with your schooling and became a radiologist, what have you been able to do over that 36-year period to enhance the student experience of those next generation or two generations of radiologists?
It goes across more than radiology at Fairview Riverside Hospital. We were a private hospital, and that was the base of the family practice residency for the University of Minnesota. And there was a generation of those folks that I worked closely with and did case reviews, would sit down with them, and we'd go through they'd select the cases that they wanted to have reviewed, and we'd have our review sessions and so forth. I think it was invaluable to them as they were understanding how to use imaging, how to really seek out the radiologist and dialogue and consult rather than going to pressure report. The fellowship program, we worked really closely at the breast center with, these young brilliant folks that were coming up through the program, and they were then going forward into the world as fellowship-trained specialists in breast imaging.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
Thank you.
Harriet.
Thanks. This is not going to be a super concise question, but I will try. We talked earlier a little bit about suburban radiologic consultants. We talked about that relationship with Fairview and the University of Minnesota system. So my questions for you, I'm trying to clarify for my own understanding whether there might be some potential need to recuse yourself from decisions in the future that regents might be asked to make, and also whether there how significant that might be. So I need to get past this. So the first question I'm going to ask is, with regard to Suburban Radiologic, are you still a shareholder?
No, I'm not.
Well, then my second question is moot. So thank you.
And answer your question. If anybody would want me to recuse myself, for any reason, I'd be happy to if they want my
input. I'd be happy to give that, but I wouldn't see the need, and I think I would be, because I have seen the inner conflicts, things that are working, things that aren't working, with the Fairview Community Hospitals, which could be just a wonderful feeder program for the university. Okay. And the, for example, Fairview Southdale could be in the position of taking over the family practice residency program and have just wonderful case material. And so there are synergies that I think I would have a great insight into.
Well, our goal is to minimize recusement, so I want to make sure that I'm clear about that. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for clarifying.
Thank you. Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doctor, one of the things that really stood out to me about the material you submitted is I think out of all the candidates we've looked at for all of these positions, I think you're the only one who's identified one issue in particular as a priority, and that's the issue of sexual assault on campus. And I want to compliment you on that because I think that shows a real awareness of some of the emerged issues in higher education, as there's a lot of institutions around the country that are going through problems on that front. So why don't you talk to us just a little bit about that? How would you address that problem as a member of the Board of Regents or seek to?
Yeah. I have reviewed the Board of Regents' recent overview of that topic. They're definitely on the right track. I mean, in background, the Clery Law has outlined that these incidents have to be reported. They have to be taken through to the police departments and monitored, and the Title IX implications, these things, anything in the way of sexual assault, sexual harassment, whatever, is not an equality situation. More often against females in society. The scope of it, I mean, 1 in 5. I mean, that is just, it just blows you away. And when you look at the lifelong post-trauma and issues that these people can get into, it's just dramatic. But getting back again to the university program, they've got things well set up. The Aurora Center is a great facility for, it's award-winning, I understand, for therapy center and support center for the sexual assault people. They've got it in place with the I'm groping for the word. It's the equality committee at the university is doing the research on the event, and things are set up to move to the adjudication and so forth. So from that standpoint, the ducks look like they're in the row, but the only thing that isn't is that the number of reported cases is here, and the expected number of total cases is here. And the education piece and just really flooding the ground with everybody's got to be comfortable reporting it. You've got to have the culture such that the perpetrators and the perpetrators' cheerleaders are pushed back the culture is such that they won't be tolerated. And so that's probably the biggest piece that is left on.
Thank you very much. Well, we've come to the end of our time. For you to make a closing statement, please.
Well, thank you. All I'd say, again, in summary, I cherish the opportunity to become a regent. My background in agriculture and medicine matches the university well. I have the board experience and leadership experience to match well with the needs of a region. Diversity is a way of life for me. I'm a true Minnesotan, and I am retired and have the time to devote to this very demanding position, and I have no conflicts.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. And Julie, thank you for being here as well.